To the Word for Today, featuring the Bible teaching ministry of Pastor Chuck Smith, founder of the Calvary Chapel Movement. This radio program is a chapter-by-chapter, verse-by-verse study through the entire Bible. And on today's edition of the Word for Today, Pastor Chuck continues his message, Peter Denies Christ, as we pick up in John chapter 18, verse 13. And now, with today's study, here's Pastor Chuck.
I think that that would be wise for a lot of these evangelists and healers and all around the country today to realize how angry God gets when people try to merchandise the gospel or to put in the way of men barriers to their coming to God. People who try to enrich themselves off of the gospel would do well to study the anger of Jesus when he found this going on within the temple courts. Annas had it in for Jesus ever since he had overturned his little business. Naturally, they put things right back together again. But it galled him that Jesus would have the nerve to upset his extortion racket. And so he was first brought to this man, an extortioner, a wealthy man, a Sadducee. And there he was first tried before Annas, then to Caiaphas, and then to Pilate. And so they brought him to Annas, who was the high priest, the father-in-law to Caiaphas, who was the high priest that same year. So that's why there were two high priests. Annas, the patriarch, the old man, recognized by the people, but the Roman government had appointed politically Caiaphas as the high priest. Now this Caiaphas was the one who said, look, it's necessary that one be killed for the whole nation. And Simon Peter followed Jesus. Now, again, this is admirable. The rest of the disciples, with the exception of John, had fled. Simon got into trouble because he wasn't going to leave Jesus. He continued to follow him. And the disciple, which was known unto the high priest, and went with Jesus into the palace of the high priest, but Peter stood at the door. Now this disciple, this other disciple, is no doubt John, referring to himself. And he was known to the high priest. Now how do you suppose it was that John was known to the high priest? According to the stories, John's father Zebedee was a very wealthy fish merchant. He had his fleet of ships up, up on the, actually, that was an Israeli slip. When you're there in Israel, they'll say, look at all of these ships, and they'll be talking about the sheep on the hillside, and they call them ships. And so, see all the ships over there. So Zebedee had his fleet of fishing boats up on the Sea of Galilee. Only a fool falls in the same ditch twice. And watch me fall in that one in just a minute to prove it. And it was impossible to get fresh fish to the market in Jerusalem. So they would salt the fish, and salted fish was one of the great delicacies. And according to the stories, and in fact today there's a little coffee shop still in the old city of Jerusalem, and under this coffee shop there are arches, and they declare to you that these arches were actually the fish market of Zebedee, and that he sold the salted fish to the high priest. Now, if this were so, as John was growing up, he probably was the delivery boy and had been there in the high priest's home many times delivering the salted fish. And this is how it is believed that John knew the high priest. At any rate, he knew him. And so he went on in, but Peter was outside. And then the other disciple, who was known to the high priest, spoke to the girl that was keeping the door, and he brought Peter on in. Then the damsel said to Peter, the one keeping the door, "Are you not one of this man's disciples?" And Peter said, "Nope, I'm not." And the servants and the officers stood there who had made a fire of coals, for it was cold. And they were warming themselves, and Peter stood with them and warmed himself. I might at this point just say, be careful whenever you seek warmth at the enemy's fires. You're in dangerous territory. The high priest then asked Jesus of his disciples and of his doctrine. Now, this was a violation of Jewish law. They had a Fifth Amendment kind of a thing where no man could testify against himself. You were not required to testify against yourself. There was the Fifth Amendment, and it was illegal to ask a man to witness against himself. So when the high priest was asking him the question, Annas asked him about his disciples and about his doctrine. And Jesus is actually answering, saying, look, I spoke openly to the world. I was always teaching in the synagogues and in the temple where the Jews always resort. And I have said nothing in secret. So why do you ask me? That's illegal. Ask them which heard me. Bring forth your witnesses. That's the legal thing to do. Those which heard me, and let them tell you what I have said unto them. Behold, they know what I have said. So it was a technical legal point that Jesus was calling the high priest on. But when he said that, one of the officers who stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand, and he said, do you answer the high priest so? And Jesus said to him, if I have spoken evil, then you bear witness of the evil. But if well, why are you smiting me? Now, evidently, this guy standing by the high priest liked to hit the prisoners. Paul had the same kind of experience later on when the high priest asked Paul a question and Paul challenged it. And the guy hit Paul and Paul turned and said, God will smite you, you whited sepulcher. He was a little more gentle than Jesus. I think of this, though, in the context of the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus said, and if a man smites thee on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. We've got to understand that particular scripture in its context. For Jesus did not really turn the other cheek. He just said, look, if I've said evil, then bear witness of the evil. And if I've brought point forth an honest point of the law, then why did you strike me? And he challenged the man for striking him illegally. Now Annas bound him again and sent him to his son-in-law Caiaphas. And John does not tell us about his trial before Caiaphas, but the other Gospels, Matthew and Mark, tell us about the trial before Caiaphas. And Simon Peter stood and warmed himself, and they said therefore unto him, are you not also one of his disciples? And he denied it and said, I am not. And one of the servants of the high priest, being a relative to the Malchus, the guy whose ear was cut off by Peter, said, did I not see you in the garden with him? And Peter again denied. And immediately, the cock crew. One of the other Gospels tells us that at this point, Jesus turned over and looked at Peter. And Peter remembered the words of the Lord, and he went out and wept bitterly. It was a very hard experience for Peter. The stories tell us that in years to come, people to bug Peter, those enemies of the gospel, would make the sound of a rooster crowing whenever they would see him, constantly reminded of his failure. It's terrible how the people will take advantage of a weakness or of the failure of the man and try and hold him down rather than to lift him again. Such should not be the case within the family of God. If a man be overtaken in a fault, then ye which are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of meekness, as we consider ourselves, lest we also be tempted and we also fall. As you would that men should do unto you, then do ye likewise also unto them. If I make a mistake, I want people to be patient and tolerant and considerate. Thus, I should be patient and tolerant and considerate. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. I used to tell that to my seminary professors every test time. Then they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the hall of judgment. Now he is being brought before Pilate. And it was early. But they themselves would not go into the judgment hall. You see, it was the area of the Gentiles. And if they went into there, they would be defiled and they couldn't celebrate the Passover. So Pilate went out unto them. Interesting how corrupt and evil they were, and yet meticulously religious. It's a terrible thing how meticulous a person can be within the rituals of a religious system and yet so totally inwardly corrupt. Can't do that because that's against my religious principles, you know, to eat meat on Friday or something. Of course, that's been dropped now, but it's amazing how that we get into these little traditional things. And as Jesus said, you strain at a gnat, but you swallow a camel. And this is so true of people that get all bound up in the traditions of religion. They begin to strain at the littlest things, but they overlook. He said, you pay tithe from your spice gardens. As you're counting out your little NIC seeds, you say, nine for me, one for the Lord. Nine for me, one for the Lord. Counting out these little black seeds. Make sure the Lord gets his tenth. And you pay tithe of your mint, your cumin, your spices. But you have omitted the more important things of righteousness and of judgment and of mercy. Now, we've got to guard ourselves against traditions and meticulous adherence to traditions, but yet overlooking some of the more important things that God is interested in. And so here they were. They wouldn't come in because they didn't want to defile themselves, and yet they were engineering the crucifixion of God's Son. What a whole paradox here. So Pilate went out to them. And he said, what accusation do you bring against this man? Now, Pilate was appointed by the Roman government as a procurator of Judea. When Herod the Great had died, he divided his kingdom to his three sons. But Herod Archelaus, who was over the area of Judea, began to extort such heavy taxes from the people that they complained to the Roman government and were granted by the Roman government to become a province of Rome under a procurator. And Pilate became the procurator over Judea. Now the Roman headquarters in that area was in Caesarea, not Jerusalem. But the procurator had to visit every major city at least once a year, And they would usually come up for the feast days to Jerusalem because they knew that that's when all of the people would be gathered. And if there was to be any civil movement against Rome, it often occurred during these feast times. Now, the first time that Pilate came from Caesarea with the Roman legion into the city of Jerusalem, on the tops of the flags of the Roman legions, they had these little busts of the Caesar, who was a god to the people. The Caesars took the position of gods. And so the Jews objected to the Romans coming in with these flags with a little golden bust of the Caesars on the top. And the other procurators had acquiesced to the Jews and had not had these little bust on the top of their gods. But Pilate was not ready to give in to their superstitions. And so the Roman soldiers under Pilate marched right into Jerusalem with these little standards on the top of their flags. And it so incensed the Jews that they started just bugging him for this action, not to do it again. And they followed him back to Caesarea and continued to bug him. And so he commanded that they all gather into the arena there in Caesarea, and he had them lock the gates. And then he said, "All right, now you quit bugging me or I'm going to kill you. I'll have the soldiers kill you. I don't want you to bug me on this issue anymore." And the Jews all leaned over and they pulled their collars off of their necks and they said, "Go ahead and kill us. You know, we don't want you doing that again." Well, even as cold as Pilate was, he couldn't just have these fellows slain like that, defenseless. And so he capitulated and he gave in on this issue. But then again, Pilate just didn't have patience with their traditions. And again, he violated some of their traditions and they appealed to the emperor, and the emperor went along with the people and overruled Pilate. According to the Roman Senate, they wanted the procurators to keep the provinces as peaceful as possible, but Pilate wasn't that kind of a personality to just bow or acquiesce. And so he was having problems, and one more report to the emperor would not be good for his record. So Pilate went out and he said, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" And they said unto him, "If he weren't a criminal, we would not have delivered him up to you." Pilate said unto them, "Then take him and judge him by your own laws." Pilate didn't want to be bothered with this. They don't want to make actual charges. Now, their charge against him was blasphemy. You remember the priest said, "Art thou then the Son of God?" And he said, "Thou sayest it." And he said, "What need we of any further witnesses? We've heard him say it with his own mouth." Blasphemy! What do you say? He's guilty of death. But they couldn't bring this charge of blasphemy before Pilate. And you'd say, go away. So before Pilate, they had to bring other charges. He is inciting people to rebel against Rome. That's a lie. Lying charges. But Pilate really didn't have any love for these people. They had burned him already. And he didn't have any patience for their religious feelings. And so when they said, "If he weren't a malefactor, we wouldn't have brought him," Pilate then said, "Then you go ahead and try him according to your own laws." He's not going to be, playing games with these guys. The Jews therefore said unto him, "It isn't lawful for us to put any man to death." Now, this rite, R-I-G-H-T, of capital punishment had been taken away from the Jews just a couple of years previous. According to the Talmud, the Roman government took away the right of capital punishment 40 years before the destruction of Jerusalem, which was destroyed in 70 AD, which means that in 30 AD, the right of capital punishment was taken away from the Jews by the Roman government. When, and this is just 2 years before the crucifixion of Jesus, when the right of capital punishment was taken away from the Jews, many of the leaders put on sackcloth, ashes on their head, and they went mourning through the streets of Jerusalem, and they said, God has failed his promise and his word. And they had mourning over the failure of God to keep his word. For God had promised through the prophecy of Jacob that the scepter shall not depart from Judah until the Messiah comes. And when in 30 AD, the Roman government took away the right of capital punishment, that was equivalent to removing the scepter from the people. And they mourned and they said, God failed his promise. What they didn't realize, God had kept his promise. He was living among them at that very moment.
We'll return with more of our verse-by-verse Bible study in the book of John on our next broadcast as Pastor Chuck continues to teach through the Bible. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. This message has been provided to you by the generous supporters of The Word for Today. For additional information about how you can support this ministry, please visit us online at thewordfortoday.org. There you'll find free message downloads from Pastor Chuck, as well as links to our podcast and other resources to help you grow in your Christian walk. You can also call us at 1-800-272-9673, or you can order a physical copy of today's message by mentioning John 18. Again, that phone number is 1-800-272-9673. Our office hours are 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. If you prefer to write, our mailing address is P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. Join us again next time as Pastor Chuck continues his verse-by-verse study through the Bible. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. And now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck.
May the Lord bring you into a special consciousness of his presence, of his love, of his interest in your life. And may you walk in the consciousness of God's grace and be led by his Spirit. May you come into a new relationship with God, a very personal relationship with God. Jesus' name.
In the Word for Today resource, Why Grace Changes Everything, Chuck Smith unfolds the mystery of grace and reveals the surprising truth. We can never grow in grace by our own efforts. With fresh insight and a deep understanding of God's marvelous grace, Pastor Chuck Smith shares with us the freedom and blessing that come from experiencing the riches of the grace of God and how it literally changes everything. You can order this resource at twft.com or by calling 1-800-272-9673. I'm your host, Kathy Parrish. Thanks for listening.
Little country church on the edge of town. People coming every day from miles around, for meetings and for Sunday school. And it's very plain to see, it's not the way.
This program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.